441. The best psychiatrist I ever saw, Dr. Harry Bryan, attached to the Hoover Pavilion Hospital, once told me that I could not be diagnosed due to the unusual life I had led. Since I saw him, I have led an even more unusual life, and therefore I suppose diagnosis is even more difficult now. Something strange, however, exists in my life and seems to have for a long time. Whether it comes from my odd lifestyle or causes the lifestyle, I don't know. But there it is. For years I felt I didn't know what I was doing. I had to watch my activities and deduce, like an outsider, what I was up to. My novels, for example. They are said by readers to depict the same world again and again. A recognizable world. Where is that world? In my head? Is it what I see in my own life and inadvertently transfer into my novels and to the readers? At least I'm consistent, since it is all one novel. I have my own special world. I guess they are in my head, in which case they are a good clue to my identity and to what is happening inside me. They are brain prints. This brings me to my frightening premise. I seem to be living in my own novels more and more. I can't figure out why. Am I losing touch with reality? Or is reality actually sliding toward a Phil Dickian type of atmosphere? And if the latter, then for God's sake, why? Am I responsible? How could I be responsible? Isn't that solipsism? It's too much for me. Like an astrophysicist who, by studying a black hole, causes it to change, I seem to alter my environment by thinking about it. Maybe by writing about it and getting other people to read my writing, I change reality by their reading it and expecting it to be like my books. Someone suggested that. I feel I have been a lot of different people. Many people have sat at this typewriter, using my fingers, writing my books. My books are forgeries. Nobody wrote them. The goddamn typewriter wrote them. It's a magic typewriter. Or like John Denver gets his songs. I get them from the air. Like his songs, they, my books, are already there. Whatever that means. The most ominous element from my books, which I am encountering in my actual life, is this. In one of my novels, Ubik, certain anomalies occur which prove to the characters that their environment is not real. Those same anomalies are now happening to me. By my own logic in the novel, I must conclude that my, or perhaps even our collective environment, is only a pseudo-environment. In my novel, what broke through was the presence of a man who had died. He speaks to them through several intermediary systems, and hence must still be alive. It is they, evidently, who are dead. What has been happening to me over 3 months is that a man I knew who died has been breaking through in ways so similar to that of Runciter in Ubik that I am beginning to conclude that I and everyone else is either dead and he is alive or, well, as in the novel, I can't figure it out. It makes no sense. Even scarier is that this man, before his death, believed that those who are dead can come across to those who are alive. He was sure his own son, who had recently died, was doing this with him. Now this man is dead, and it would seem he is coming across to me. I guess there is a certain logic in this. Even more logical is that I and my then-wife Nancy participated as a sort of disinterested team observing whether Jim Jr. was actually coming through. It was our conclusion that he was. On the other hand, I wrote Ubik before Jim Pike died out there on the desert. But Jim Jr. had already died. So I guess my novel could be said to be based on Jim Jr. coming through to his father. So my novel Ubik was based on life, and now life is based on it, but only because it, the novel, goes back to life. I really did not make it up. I just observed it and put it into a fictional framework. After I wrote it, I forgot where I got the idea. Now it has come back to, haunt me, if you'll pardon me for putting it that way. The implication in Ubik that they were all dead is because their world devolved in strange ways, projections onto their environment of their dwindling psyches. This does not carry across to my own life, nor did it to Jim's when his son came across. There is no reason for me to project the inference, then, of the novel to my own world. Jim Pike is alive and well on the other side. But that doesn't mean we are all dead or that our world is unreal. However, he does seem to be alive and as mentally enthusiastic and busy as ever. I should know, it's all going on inside me and comes streaming out of me each morning as I, he, or maybe both of us, as I get up and begin my day. I read all the books that he would be reading if he were here and not me. This is only one example. It'll have to do for now. They write books about this sort of thing, fiction books like The Exorcist, which are later revealed to be based on an actual incident. Maybe I should write a book about it and later on reveal that it was based on an actual incident. I guess that's what you do. It's convenient, then, that I'm a novelist. I've got it made. There have been more changes in me and more changes in my life due to that than in all the years before. I refer to the period starting in mid-March. It's now mid-July when the process began. Now I am not the same person. People say I look different. I have lost weight. Also, I have made a lot of money doing the things Jim tells me to do, more money than ever before in a short period, doing things I've never done, nor would imagine doing. More strange yet, I now drink beer every day, and never any wine. I used to drink only wine, never beer. I chug-a-lug the beer. The reason I drink is that Jim knows that wine is bad for me, the acidity, the sediment. He had me trim my beard, too. For that, I had to go up and buy special barber's scissors. I didn't know there even was such a thing. Mostly, though, what I get is a lot of information, floods of it, night after night, on and on, about the religions of the antique world, from Egypt, India, Persia, Greece, and Rome. Jim never loses interest in that stuff, especially the Zoroastrian religion, and the Pythagorean mystery cult, and the Orphic cults, and the Gnostics, on and on. I'm even being given special terms in Greek, such as syntonic. I'm told to be that. In harmony with, it means. And the Logos doctrine. All this comes to me in dreams, many dreams, hundreds of dreams, on and on forever. As soon as I close my eyes, information in the form of printed matter, visual matter such as photographs, audio stuff in the form of phonograph records, it all floods over me at a high rate of printout. These dreams have pretty well come to determine what I do the next day. They program me or prepare me. Last night I dreamed that I was telling people that J.S. Bach was laughing at me. I imitated J.S. Bach's laugh for them. They were not amused. Today I find myself putting on a Bach record rather than rock. It's been months, even years, since I automatically reached for Bach. Also, last night I dreamed that I took the microphone away from Ed McMahon, the announcer on Johnny Carson's show, because he was drunk. Tonight when Ed McMahon came on, I automatically got to my feet and switched the TV off. My desire to watch it gone. This fitted in fine because my Bach record was playing anyhow. I should mention that I have become completely sophisticated now, having withdrawn all my projections from the world. I am mature and am no longer lachrymose nor sentimental. My spelling is as lousy as ever. There is no known psychological process which could account for such fundamental changes in my character, in my habits, view of the world. I perceive it totally differently now, my daily tastes, even the way I margin my typed pages. I have been transformed, but not in any way I ever heard of. At first, I thought it to be a typical religious conversion, mostly because I thought about God all the time, wore a consecrated cross, and read the Bible. But that evidently is due to Jim's lifestyle. I also drive differently, much faster, reaching for an air vent on the dashboard that is not there. Evidently, I'm used to another car entirely. And when I gave my phone number the last two times, I gave it wrong. Another number. And to me, the weirdest thing of all, at night phone numbers swim up into my mind that I never heard of before. I'm afraid to call them. I don't know why. Perhaps in some other part of Orange County, someone else is giving my phone number as his, drinking wine for the first time in his life, and listening to rock. I don't know. I can't figure it out. If so, I have his money, a lot of it. But I got it from my agent, or rather ex-agent, since after 23 years, I fired him. To explain the totally different tone and attitude of my letters, I told my agent I had my father-in-law, a CPA, working with me. At the time, this was to my mind a lie, but looking back, I can see a thread of truth in it. Someone was and is working with me on all business matters, making my attitude tough and shrewd and suspicious. I am hard-boiled, and I never regret my decisive actions. I can say no whenever I want to. Jim was that way. No sentimentality. He was the shrewdest bishop I ever knew. Perhaps he is collaborating in the writing of this right now. Maybe I, Phil Dick, have just abreacted to a past personality, formed up to the mid-50s. Lost skills and heartaches that came after that. Well then, we have here a sort of time travel, rather than someone who is dead coming across from the other side. It is still me, with my old prior tastes and skills and habits. Mercifully, the sad recent years are gone. Another form of my odd and chronic psychological ailment, amnesia, which my head learned after my dreadful auto accident in 1964. Note: the year 1964 was a bad one for Dick. Burned out after writing 7 novels in 12 months, Dick suffered a serious bout of depression. Writer's block and 2 bad acid trips took their toll. After separating from his wife and leaving bucolic Point Reyes, Dick got an apartment in East Oakland, a gritty neighborhood he referred to as East Gackville. In July, Dick flipped his car, dislocating his shoulder. After the accident, Dick languished in a body cast and then wore a sling for 2 months. Unable to type, Dick was forced to dictate notes for a long-planned sequel to The Man in the High Castle, 1962. Here Dick acknowledges that, basically a decade later, he found himself in exactly the same circumstance. After re-injuring his shoulder and undergoing surgery to repair it, Dick was once again dictating notes for a sequel to High Castle that would also integrate his 2374 experiences into the novel. Eventually, the notes he was dictating became Radio Free Albemuth, published posthumously in 1985. Dick never completed the sequel to The Man in the High Castle, arguably the most successful book of his career and a high point he seemed determined to revisit, especially when he was down on his luck. D.G. End note. Come to think of it, it is the memories laid down since 1964 which have dimmed. I recall saying to Tessa that it seemed to me that precisely 10 years of memory was gone. That would take it right back to the day in, my God, almost 10 years to the day, when I rolled my VW in Oakland on a warm spring Saturday. Perhaps what happened that day was that from the physical and mental shock, an alternate personality was struck off. I did have extraordinary amnesia during the months afterward. So that might make an excellent hypothesis. The trauma of that auto accident started a secondary personality into being, and it remained until mid-March of this year, at which time, for reasons unknown, it faded out and my original real personality returned. That makes sense. More so than any other theory. Also, it was in 1964 that I first encountered Jim Pike, the letter I wrote him for Marin. He was a vivid personality in my life at that time. It was only a few days after writing that letter for Marin that I suffered the auto accident. No wonder I have Jim interwoven with this restored personality. He was on my mind at the time it was abolished. I've just picked up where I left off in 1964. I've explained everything but the preference for beer over wine. I never drank beer. And the business shrewdness. I never was shrewd. And the general health kick, the religious kick, the lack of sentimentality, the resolution, the ability to discern a lie, the intention and determination never to lie, the vastly higher level of effectiveness in all fields, the trimming my beard so expertly. Everything is explained but those. Also, I still have to explain the constant written material which I see in dreams every night, including Greek and Latin and Sanskrit, and God knows what else, words I never knew but have to look up. This abreaction to before the auto accident explains some things, but it doesn't explain others. Could it be that I now am what I would have been had the accident never occurred? As if I've shifted over to a sort of alternative world where I grew naturally and normally to this mature and responsible character formation, not derailed tragically by first the accident, then the involvement with Nancy et al., which of necessity followed.